Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of July 25th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a lovely Sunday morning, all saddled up and ready to go, is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Saddled up. Okay, yippee-ki-yay. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Had a good weekend, had a not-so-busy Saturday, so I'm doing well. What about you?
Oh, I'm doing well, actually. You know, I went to a ball game with some friends. That was nice. And, you know, it's fun because you get to see different things. And some of that happened. I mean, and you get to drink a beer and so on. So it was a really good experience.
All right. On this week's show, we're going to get the Mike Zagurski experience. He's from the Yokohama Bay Stars. And we're going to talk about the Bay Stars, the collision rule, and a whole bunch more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay, well, on Friday I had the aforementioned Mike Zagurski experience and went out and talked to the former Carp guy, and it's a lot of fun. He's really ebullient or bubbly or positive. You know, you could pick a word. You could pick quite a few adjectives for Mike, but we're going to stick with the ones that are relevant. Now, Mike played for the Phillies, and I was looking this up last night, and it was one of those things where you think, you know, I wish to death that I had looked this up before I went to talk to him. Now, I knew he was friends with Scott Matheson,
because
Scott said, you got to talk to Mike. He's a great guy. Okay. And then I looked and I saw where he played, and I'm thinking, you know, I knew Scott played in AAA for the Phillies, and there is Zagurski. In 2010, he was with the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. And so I'm looking and I'm seeing, you know, I wonder who else was on that team, because so many guys come to Japan now and so many guys go back from Japan. And I'm just wondering, you know, if one day there wasn't a conversation between, you know, Scott and Mike and Brandon Duckworth and Ryan Vogelsong.
Wow.
And thinking, you know, either A, Japanese baseball is like this, and if you do it, you got to do this, or, you know, steer clear, or you all got to go, or what? You know, it could have been, you know, I would have loved to have heard that if it was there, if they were all there at that same time.
Right.
Now, Ryan Vogelsong, of course, was the guy who had 3 years with, 2 years with the Hanshin Tigers and one with the Oryx Buffaloes.
Right.
And that in 2010, he was on the verge of his all-star renaissance with the San Francisco Giants. So I'm really curious if there was any conversation there. But anyway.
We'll have to ask him next time.
We'll have to ask him, indeed. Now, Mike is a stocky lefty, and he's got some speed, as we'll talk about. And he's a fairly nice complement in Yokohama to what has become I don't know if it's the most effective bullpen, but it's certainly a well-organized bullpen. So this is what Mike had to say. Okay, our guest today on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Mike Zagurski, formerly the Hiroshima Carp, currently of the Yokohama DeNA Bay Stars. Thank you for being on the show.
Hey, appreciate you having me.
It's always a pleasure, and we're so glad to see you come back to Japan. Now tell me, what was the first response? I guess your agent told you we got a deal with Yokohama's interested. What was your first thought?
You know, I was excited about it. You know, I had a few different options in the States, and, you know, a little bit older now and nothing quite piqued my interest the way I wanted it to. And, you know, the goal along was to come back to Japan, and you know, the roster's filled up pretty quickly there, and just kind of odd man out maybe. And I was fortunate enough to have the Bay Stars and the DeNA call me, and they were able to work something out for me, and I'm very pleased to be here.
Okay, now obviously the first year in Japan is a bit of, there's a lot of cultural adjustments, there's a lot of off-field adjustments. What would you, you know, if somebody's coming to Japan, you know, and they're really not familiar with what's going on, what's the first thing you'd tell them? You know, you got to be ready for this. Most important is got to be ready for this.
Have an open mind. It's, you know, from on the field to off the field are very different, even on the field baseball America to on the field baseball Japan. Mm-hmm. Just the style of play and the hours of work that go in, you know, into Japanese baseball and practice and preparation things is a bit different than America, and the schedules are a little different. Off the field, you know, I say keep an open mind, because there's, you know, I was eating a lot of random things and I wasn't quite sure what they were, and they didn't taste bad, and you find out what they are, and, you know, if you would have told me what it was before I ate it, I wouldn't even have tried it.
Okay.
You know, and things like that, you know, raw squid and things like that, but you kind of keep an open mind, you taste them, and, you know, it's I'm glad I did it. You know, I've learned to really enjoy the food here.
Okay, now did it change? A lot of players come here, and after the first year, they have a chance to reevaluate where they are in the baseball world, both in the sense of geographically, you know, I'm in Japan or I'm in America or I'm in spring camp, but also sort of mentally, you know, where I am as a player in terms of where I can be and where I, you know, where I thought I should be. Did you have any of that after your first season here? Did you have a thinking, if I'm going to succeed as a ball player, this is what I need to do? Maybe a new thought after your year in Japan?
Yeah, you know, I think you always have to be willing to change and adjust accordingly. I feel like I had a pretty open mind coming in.
Okay.
And me personally as a player, I have a pretty good grasp of who I am and what I can do and things I'm not so great at. And you know, I had a lot of success in the minor leagues in America and not so much in the major leagues. And you know, the Japan game maybe is a little bit more tailored to my style of pitching, to whereas maybe in the major leagues it wasn't quite as effective as I would have liked it to be. And
specifically, how would you explain that to somebody who doesn't know, who hasn't watched you pitch much?
You know, I'm fairly aggressive, and you know, in Japan, you know, my fastball probably works a little bit better than it does. You know, Triple A it works okay, but when you get to the big leagues, you know, a 92 mile an hour fastball to David Ortiz, you know, probably isn't gonna get it if it's not where you want it. So it's the style of play is probably a little bit more conducive to the way I pitch. And
okay.
You know, they're very, very good players here in the way they play. And, you know, they put the ball in play a lot and they run around on the bases a lot. And it's just a little bit of an adjustment, to say the least.
Now, some of the guys go back, and I know several guys went back after their first year in Japan and they thought, well, I could have done that better. You know, I could have been more physically prepared. I could have been more mentally prepared this off season. Is going to be a different kind of offseason. Was that the case for you?
I think every year that's the case, no matter where I'm at. I think there's always, you know, if you're not continuing to try to get better, you're getting worse, in my opinion. And I think, like you said, you know, being here for a year and kind of seeing the game and little certain things, you know, I increased my amount of agility work and things I did for bunt preparations and things like that, where in America it's not, you know, not as focused upon. So little things like that, there's certainly, I agree with you in the sense of, you know, you tailor your game a little bit more to where you're playing.
So when you're doing, were you in spring camp this year?
I was not.
Okay.
I was not. So I was in America. I wasn't in spring camp in America there, so I was preparing as if I was just going to play, and then it kind of changed to maybe just playing in America and then back to Asia. So it was a little bit of a back and forth, but we got where we needed to be.
Okay, now you're in an interesting standpoint. You're with Hiroshima last year, and this year you're with Yokohama. And how does it feel to be on the other side? You know, obviously your whole baseball experience here was with Hiroshima, and now Yokohama. What's the atmosphere different? What to you is sort of like, you had to explain that. What's the difference between playing in Yokohama and playing in Hiroshima? Is there any are there any differences?
From a baseball standpoint, you know, it's hard for me to compare a lot with the Carb. I spent a good majority of time in the Nigun, but when I was in Ichigo, we had a good run. You know, we were scuffling. It seemed to be when I was there, we would pitch well and not hit well, and then we would hit well and not pitch well. We just couldn't quite get it going. And you know, since I've been here at the Bay Stars, even days we haven't done one of the two well, we always seem to be in the game late. You know, and I don't know what the exact cause that is. I would lead it kind of to the boss. You know, Alex, that's kind of the way he is. Just, you know, grind out every at bat, grind out every pitch. Let's get it to the end of the game and see where we're at. And I think as you see us play games, you know, we can be down 6 runs early, and next thing you know, it's 6-5 in the eighth. We're right back in it. So we've done some things well.
Well, before you got here, the issue with the Bay Stars was great pitching and defense, but the battery work was off the charts.
Okay.
And not scoring.
Right. Right.
And recently it's been the...
Yeah, quite a bit.
Alex has been resting some of his starters.
Sure.
They're on the farm team, you know, getting ready for the second half.
Right.
And the runs have been allowing a lot of runs, but on the other side, scoring tons of runs.
Right, and I think that's baseball in general, too. You know, I think you go through spurts where you're not great. You know, I spent about 3 straight weeks up where it was hard to get innings in the bullpen because our starters were so good. It was 7 innings, and then, you know, Mikami and Yasu at the end, which that's, you know, in a perfect world, that's exactly what we want. But like you said, Alex has done a good job of, you know, managing the younger kids and, you know, send them down for a little bit and let's get them a little bit of a break. And, you know, we got about 50 games to go here, and we're get the horses all back in the stable ready to go. So we'll see where it gets us.
Yeah, I think we're all looking forward to seeing that, you know, really healthy rotation, you know, the fit rotation in the second half against teams maybe that aren't so fit.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of our goal. You know, I think it's, you know, we're certainly here trying to catch Hiroshima still, and, you know, they got a little bit of a lead on us right now. We're going to play day by day, and, you know, like you said, when we get those pitchers back and they're, you know, they're all healthy and they're all going good, we're pretty darn good pretty darn good staff of starters. So hopefully we can keep him healthy and keep him going.
Okay, now the bullpen has been it's been a little ragged the last month, to be honest. I saw the WHIP for the Bay Stars bullpen's like 1.5 the last month. And is there anything I can't evaluate your, but why don't you do a little self-evaluation here? How's it been going for you?
You know, I've had some ups and downs. It's okay. Been, you know, I would say it's been better than when I first got here. There's, okay. Like I said, there's certainly room to improve, and, you know, I need to do a better job of keeping runs off the board when I'm coming into games. And, you know, each situation, you know, we have a good group down there, and everybody's kind of got their own little roles. And, you know, certainly getting the last out in the ninth inning may seem more important to getting the third out in the fifth inning, but you know, if that's your job to get the third out in the fifth inning, that's the job where, you know, that person's specifically focused on. And you know, we kind of do it together down there. And you know, in terms of the WHIP and getting beat up a little bit, I think a lot of teams have a little bit of a drought. You know, the starters were so good for so long, you know, they always say you complain about getting too many innings and all of a sudden you can't get enough. So
okay,
we'll be just fine. You know, we're very, very good. You know, 8-9, and Suda and Tanaka have been pretty darn good all year too. So if we can just kind of keep everybody fresh and keep them going, I like our chances going
obviously,
forward.
Obviously, with scoring a lot of runs recently, it's got to be a lot more fun down there. Because,
absolutely.
You know, even if you're down 3 or 4 runs, it's like, this team can come back.
Right, and the weird thing is, even when we're down 3 or 4 runs, we're down there still planning to use Mikami and Yasu, because right. We feel pretty darn good about them scoring again and getting us back in it. So it's been a nice little run, and if we can, you know, find a way to, you know, we got 50 games or so to go, if we can keep plugging along, I think we'll be where we want to be for the playoffs, and you know, I think we'll be kind of a force to be reckoned with once we get in there.
Okay, which of the players, you know, we've got a major league scout here today, and he said, Mike, I've been given a pass to take 2 of the Bay Stars players back to America with me tonight. Which two would you take?
I'll tell you what, we've got a handful that I think got a chance to be pretty good. I think it's, you know, first and foremost, I think you see Setsugo, and yeah. You know, I knew he was a very good player last year playing against him, and getting to play with him every day, he's even better than I thought he was. I mean, he does something different every game. He makes a jumping catch on the wall. He throws a guy out at second base. He's won games for us a lot of different ways, which, you know, I don't think a lot of people would, you know, attribute that to him. Like, oh, he's just a home run hitter. I mean, there's a game he draws 3 walks and scores 3 runs just because he draws walks. So I think first and foremost, he would probably be your number one guy. We got a handful of starting pitchers that are young. I think the Yoshidas and the Imanagas and, you know, the Enos and the Yamaguchis are a little bit older. Those guys all have a chance. And I think if you had to really get down to it, Yamasaki at the end of the game is a pretty darn good pitcher. And, you know, he's continuing to get better and he's working hard. And, you know, I think he's still probably a few years away. And, you know, hopefully he saves 50 games for the next 10 years here. And
so you're going to study how to pitch throw a two-seamer like he did? That quote-unquote two-seamer?
Yeah, if I could learn, I'd be a lot better pitcher. I know that. He showed me it. It just doesn't quite work for me. But, he's got great stuff. You know, Mikami's
Jose,
more than capable.
I asked Jose about it. He said, his two-seamer's the best splitter in Japan.
Right, yeah. It's, yeah. The difference of opinions of the names, I guess, here in the States, but it works for him, so I can't argue with it.
No, okay. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Best wishes for the rest of the season. Stay healthy and keep winning.
Hey, appreciate you having me.
All right, thanks a lot. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for doing the interview.
No, it was my pleasure. It was, we could sit in the dugout where it wasn't drizzling on us.
Oh, that's right. The weather was bad that day. I remember emailing you and asking, oh, man, I'm worried. I wonder if you can get a chat today.
Yeah, that was a concern, because if it's raining, they're at their indoor practice facility, which you can't get in because it's so small. So what would you like to comment about, Mr. Gibson?
Well, yeah, I mean, I love the comment that he said, hey, 92 doesn't play against David Ortiz if you don't locate it where you want. And I thought that was the one comment of the entire interview. But you know, this was going to hit home with me when he started talking about food and having an open mind when he came to Japan and trying everything. Because you know, my food.
I wasn't even thinking.
You didn't think about that.
How... I don't know what's the word of. I mean, how dense of me not to consider your food, your food sensibilities.
My food issues. Well, yeah, they have a word for it in Japanese. I don't think it really translates. But anyway,
they've got some words for it in America that do quite nicely.
But that's what I did. I came to Japan with an open mind, and I tried a lot of things, and I I ruled them out one by one, as as I knew I would, but I tried them anyway.
And pretty much now he's are you you're but you're not back at square one. You have found things in Japan you do like.
I actually found things in Japan I could eat, and I learned to eat cabbage, which I never touched when I was in the States.
Give me that cabbage, baby.
So, you know, I did try. But yeah, so I came to Japan with the same attitude, and I think, you know, his first go around, actually I looked at his numbers, they weren't all that different with the carp.
Mm-hmm.
He's the same guy, and he might actually have had better numbers with the carp. It just doesn't seem that way because he seems to be more effective. Maybe because he's not pitching so much. I couldn't even put it together because I went through, you know, the months. He only had 19 appearances, I think it was last year with the carp, and he already has 20. Well, I guess if he threw yesterday, he's got 21, right?
Yeah.
So he just seems to be a different guy, but he's more effective, it seems. Now,
everybody who played for the carp is more effective. Last year is more effective this year.
That's true. Even if they're in different places, right?
Sort of science experiment going on down there last year.
But I heard from him, maybe it was Scott Matheson, but I heard from another import player last year that Mike is a really smart guy. And while, you know, he doesn't have the electric stuff, he can figure out the situations. He can assess the batters. Mm-hmm. He can read bats. He can read, you know, what they're trying to do. And I obviously, he did a good job on Friday because he threw this 1-2-3 inning that set up Tsutsugo's Central League record. I guess it was a MPB record.
It was.
And he hit multiple home runs in three consecutive games, so that was an MPB record. So, mm-hmm. you know, to hear him talk about the Japanese game fitting his style better, it made me wonder, you know, why he didn't have that great success with the carp. But and again, he pitched yesterday. He's won two games in a row. And just like mm-hmm. he was talking about in the interview, you know, sometimes there's a drought where you don't get a lot of work as a reliever, especially if you're the sixth inning guy, maybe the seventh inning guy, where you're going to come mm-hmm. in and face a left-hander and then head to the bench. You don't get a lot of work when the starting pitchers are doing well. But for him, that stuff, you can tell he's really into it. I had talked to him earlier this year and said, mm-hmm. hey, you know, we want you to be on the show at some point. I know we missed you with the carp last year. We didn't get a chance to talk.
We miss everybody we don't talk to. You know,
we miss everyone we don't talk to.
We got him on the list, so we haven't talked to this guy.
Right.
He's next.
And I don't really know what his role was supposed to be with the bullpen, with the carp. It seemed to me that he was supposed to be a back-end guy, Right now, I think he fits in really well, slotting into situations or coming in for an inning a couple times, three times a week, or coming in to get a guy right now, maybe a couple guys here and there. But it seems like he's this role really seems to fit him.
Well, they know, you know, in Yokohama, they know who the king of the bullpen is, because when you're at the game, and again, this is the great thing about going to the game as opposed to, you know, in our job, for the most part, we're stuck on a desk. I mean, I go out and write games sometimes, but then you're watching that game,
mm-hmm.
and you don't get to see all the games, and you don't get to be at all the stadiums. But going Friday, you know, I saw Jason Kosker from the Japan Times, saw a couple of people I hadn't seen in a while, and Jason was talking about how Yasuaki Yamasaki's entrance was at Yokohama during the second All-Star game last weekend, and he said the place was electric, the place was rocking, and mm-hmm. then now, it's just kind of grown this year. The crowds have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And when he comes in, it's like, I don't remember a closer coming into that kind of reception in Japan. With two exceptions, I would say Mark Kroon.
Okay.
And Kazuhiro Sasaki.
Yeah, it was good. That's the thing is I was thinking about was the same stadium. That's
right.
The only thing I can remember.
Well,
the same
they all
stadium.
Started there, so it was... it was interesting, but really they've got an affinity for that. It's been a while, and it was really hopping Friday night when he came out, and I'm thinking, wow, this is pretty cool. So obviously he's not being asked to be the closer.
Right.
But they have a string of guys who know more or less when they're going to be used, which is, you know, it's always fun to know that stuff to some degree. So yeah, it was really fun to see that and to see these guys work. Yeah, when I wasn't writing a story. You know, when I wasn't looking at, you know, especially in the ninth inning, because here's the thing about our job and, you know, when we are at a game.
Mm-hmm.
The ninth inning is not the time we have to sit and ponder the details, you know, soak up the atmosphere.
Ninth
inning is saying, how long is my story? Reading through it, does it make sense? Am I getting, you know, is this guy's name right? Is this number right? And the game almost becomes an afterthought.
Correct, all
you're looking
sir.
For there is the third out, the final score, and we'll pick up the pieces later. So that all that atmosphere stuff. So actually going to the game when you weren't right, when I wasn't writing story was really a blessing. So yeah, that was what struck me about that in his talk about the bullpen and, you know, and how they were all they're all positive and ready to go. And this is, I think, that's something that has been happening at Yokohama the past 5 or 6 years, is they've gradually gotten better.
Yes.
I don't think, you know, it's not all Alex Ramirez is doing, but it's been a kind of a organizational change, some good, some bad, but generally, you know, it's been trending upwards for a few years, and this year is sort of really exciting. Now, sort of really exciting. How ambivalent is that? I've become a politician.
Well, so, it's the appropriate time.
So, yeah, I suppose. Now vote for me. So, anyway, and one of the things I was thinking about, and, you know, I asked about, you know, his off-season work, and I thought it was interesting. He says every year is a different challenge, and I guess I could have been more specific, but I suspect that he would just become vaguer in his answers.
Right.
But I asked about it because I had this image in my mind. As soon as he said flexibility and fielding.
Agility, yeah. He said agility. He worked on agility.
Agility, exactly. I was curious what his teammates might have thought about that in when they were doing pitchers fielding practice in the spring. You know, they're going, holy smokes, Mike, you know, like, you know, where did you sign up for the Gold Glove competition this year or something?
Right.
Because I've heard that happen to other guys who went to Japan and left after a year, and they really hit it hard, and they went to spring training, and they blew people's images of them completely out of the water.
Right.
So I guess the next question is when he was working out on his own, as if he was in spring training, was he saying to himself, oh man, I caught that ball. You guys would really be impressed if you were here to see it.
See that, yeah. So, he's got to say, oh, dude, that was sick, like, you know,
imaginary,
to himself.
That's right, like imaginary teammates.
Right. The other thing that caught my, I mean, it was a good question on your part too, and you asked him about guys he would bring back to the States if he were a scout. And I, with all those arms, and we've talked about the pitching, the starting pitchers being really good, and they've got a good young foundation for a staff that can, you know, keep that team in the running in the Central League for a long time. And but he said the arm that he's most impressed with, or the guy, I don't know if he's specifically the arm, but he talked about Yamasaki, the Komajin, and giving him that much praise, that really surprised me.
That didn't surprise me. Actually, one of the guys he named was one of the guys when I was talking to a scout several weeks ago. And most of the scouts don't volunteer information. I mean, they'll answer questions, but they don't say, this is the guy I'm looking for, with rare exceptions. A famous one being when the Red Sox were stalking Daisuke Matsuzaka in 2006.
One man's stalk is another man's scout.
Well, there were two of them. Yeah, John Deeble and Craig Shipley were pretty much his shadow. And Wayne Grasek asked them when we were at a game, this is like, you're here to see Matsuzaka, aren't you? And of course he knew the question because he was working for the Red Sox, or does work for the Red Sox, and Wayne does as a stringer. And Craig Shipley or John Deeble said, no, we're here to see Hideki Okajima.
Uh-huh.
Which was, we, you know, people laughed. And they went, laughed. And John said, no, he's, well, we like his 12-6 curveball. Anyway, so it's pretty rare for scouts just to volunteer stuff. And that was something of a smokescreen. But the other day, one of the scout told me, now this is a guy we're here to scout. And I went like, the second time this year, this guy's name blew me away to hear his name mentioned in a sort of a position of responsibility. So that'd be Shun Yamaguchi.
Oh.
So people are having an eye on him.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, It is interesting. So obviously, Alex Ramirez wasn't the only person who saw some bigger things for his right-hander.
Okay. All right, let's talk about the Bay Stars in general now. I think they're going to be that we're going to start to hear the Rami Magic term used in the media a little bit more because this team is winning. It's looking good. It had a comeback win over the Giants on Saturday, which was I think was a kind of meat and potatoes kind of win for them because the Bay Stars fell behind early. And then some magical thing happened where Ramirez used three consecutive pinch hitters and they all came through and they end up having a big rally and getting the lead and end up winning this game. And, you know, that started me thinking with when Bobby mix and matches lineups, Bobby Valentine with the Lotte Marines, they started calling it Bobby Magic. So I'm expecting to hear Rami Magic sometime soon here because he's doing it. Their pinch hitters are out of this world. They've been that way all season, but it's, you know, he's got a crew of guys, six guys who are hitting better than 333 as pinch hitters. And the fewest at bats we're talking about is 14. So
interesting.
Yeah. They're really tearing it up when they come off the bench with pinch hitters and not to mention that Yoshitomo Tsutsugo is tearing it up.
Yeah.
We will put it, he's just an aside here.
I know. I mean, it's like when he makes an out, it's news right now. So, yeah, he's been pretty impressive. And I think the bit about the pinch hitters actually kind of, I'd seen it and I knew about it, but I hadn't been really tracking it. And one of the things that's kind of interesting is a guy I've liked for a long time with the Bay Stars. He was basically a minor league standout who never got a chance to play was Tatsuya Shimozono. He's kind of become their ace pinch hitter.
Yep.
And this guy just, he does everything. He's got, you know, he's got some gap power and he just will get on base like a madman.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Tsutsugo and last year when we did an interview with Alex Ramirez. And I think I mentioned this on the show earlier this year, the fact that he was a roaming coach with the Oryx Buffaloes and he pointed to Tsutsugo as one of the top batters in Japan and mentioned him in the same breath with Hideki Matsui. So this is no surprise that he has found, I mean, obviously Tsutsugo had an injury recently. He came back from that. He's looking good. But what's more surprising for me is that Jose Lopez really hasn't taken off under Ramichand. That to me, I just thought that those two were just going to work great together, and it just seems that Lopez is he's got too many gaps. He's got too many at bats where he just looks like he has his plan and the plan that the pitcher is trying to put into play just are not the same. You know, he doesn't look like he knows where who he's facing sometimes or what's coming, and he's taking some bad swings and has bad at bat after bad at bat, and then once in a while he makes good contact and they catch the ball. You know, he hit a couple of shots last night, a couple of rockets where you thought, oh well, he's going to get a hit here, and it just they were atom balls. So I'm kind of surprised at that, but for the most part, I think remember Wayne Grassick was very ambitious picking the Bay Stars to win the Central League this year, and while I don't see that happening, I do see just like what Mike said in his interview that they can contend for a playoff and that they'll a playoff spot and that they'll be a force to be reckoned with if they get in.
Yeah, I mean somebody's gonna have to play them to advance at least. So I like a lot of things about the Bay Stars I've seen, and I had a chance to talk with Alex the other day. We had a fairly long chat about this and that, and he was unfortunately most of it was off the record, so I won't make too many comments, but he, you know, he had other options besides being Bay Stars manager, but he had his eyes on being Bay Stars, on being a manager.
Okay.
And even before he knew this job was going to materialize, he was basically turning down everything that wasn't a managing job.
Good. Good for him.
So, yeah, I think it was kind of interesting. He's shown that kind of focus on what he's trying to accomplish and achieve, and I think that's sort of the message that's going on with the team. Now, a couple of things I want to mention about the Bay Stars. One is, you know, they started the season with the best ERA in the Central League and for a while the best ERA in NPB. And now they're basically, they're trending them backwards. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that he's been limiting the work of his starting pitchers.
Yes.
And he's been, you know, he's been bringing in guys to rest other guys. And Imanaga has been on the farm team, you know, getting healthy for the second half. And Ishida has been limited to sometimes five and a third innings. And over the last 4 weeks, the Bay Stars have the worst quality start percentage in NPB, 24%.
Yeah, I noticed it had been going down.
Right. Their walk rates are now sort of middle of the pack after being the best in NPB for the first two months of the season.
Right.
Their bullpen whip the last 4 weeks is 1.53.
That's on the high side.
Yeah, third worst in NPB. Only the Cebu Lions and the Lotte Marines are worse.
Hmm.
Okay. And the third thing I noticed was something I saw on Friday when I was at the game, and I was watching, you know, it was the Giants were playing the Bay Stars, and I was in left field, and it became really noticeable from that angle. And I think what it was, the reason it was noticeable is that I think when Yoshinobu Takahashi, who didn't really want to become manager, you know, it wasn't his plan for this year.
Right. Yes. And remember.
So when they made him the manager, the Giants gave him help and they bought him a book. Now, do you remember things like color by numbers and paint by numbers?
I do.
You do?
I am old enough to. Yes.
I used to have one. Yeah, I used to have a color by numbers book. I was very fond of. Anyway, this what the Giants found him was a manager by number. You know, that included a little fielding position guide and, you know. And also an offensive tactic wheel.
So essentially, look, you don't have to use your brain. Just go to the chart.
Yeah, pretty much.
Look
so.
At it,
so,
just like Japanese companies do for everything
yeah,
else. Yeah,
that's right. So basically, every Giants fielder plays in a predictable location. You know, I was watching, because I was in left field, I was watching where the Giants positioned their left fielders and their shortstops and third basemen, and they all stayed within an area, probably a circle, with a diameter of about maybe 10 meters.
Right.
Maybe
so,
5 meters. That's probably excessive. It might have been 5 meters. Pretty
you
much. You
stand
go there.
Here.
No, and when we want you to move, take 2 steps to the left, 2 steps to the right, forward, back, you know, but nothing outlandish. And in comparison to that, the Bay Stars, Yoshitomo Tsutsugo, the left fielder, was against some hitters, was playing in the left center field gap in the power alley, and the center fielder was shifted over towards the right field gap. And I think it was against Shinosuke Abe. That's where Tsutsugo was, and he was about 100, it wasn't 100 yards, but he was 50 yards from the left field foul line. And the only guy on the left side of the field was Elian Herrera, who was sort of in the hole at shortstop. And the shortstop, Kuramoto, was playing about a step on the first base side of second base and, you know, in shallow center field.
Right. We had a question about extreme shifts and how they don't do it much here in Japan. And so now we're seeing this with the Bay Stars.
Right. And, you know, and of course they do different things on offense, but it's interesting. And anyway, so I was thinking about that, and as I was working on a story about Tetsuo Yamada this past couple of weeks, and I discovered that he's the most extreme pull hitter in Japan. Like,
right.
56% of the balls he hits are to third base or left field.
56.
Yeah. He almost, right field is sort of an abstract concept for him right now.
Right. You okay. Don't need it right now either.
No,
yeah.
You don't need it. So anyway, so I was thinking, you know, if you shift, you know, who is a shift most effective against? Obviously guys who put the ball in the same place, more or less, you know, in the same direction.
Correct.
So I was thinking, if the Bay Stars have a shift and it's working, might they not be most effective against players who pull the ball the most, at least more effective than the rest of the Central League? And the answer is yes. Now, the Central League, and actually this data is through Friday's games, the Bay Stars opponents had a 300 batting average on balls in play, and the rest of the Central League had a 305 batting average on balls in play against other teams.
Hmm.
Okay. So there's not a huge, as big a difference as there was at the beginning of the season. Okay, now you have Tetsuo Yamada. Against the Bay Stars, his I'll just mention the average on balls in play was 277.
Okay.
Against the rest of the Central League, it's 412.
Yeah. And the 200 sounded low to me, so.
Yeah, a little low. Brad Eldred, 233 against Yokohama, 447 against the rest of the CL.
Yeah, he pulls a lot.
Yeah. Garrett Jones is the third most consistent pull hitter. He's got a 346 average against Yokohama. He's 100 points better against them than the rest of the league, but, you know, it happens sometimes. But you run down the list. Mauro Gomez, a bit better against the rest of the league. Seiya Suzuki, nearly 100 points better against the rest of the league. Ricardo Nanita has a slight edge against the Bay Stars. Takashi Toritani, who I never thought of a pull hitter, I think. And at this point, you're running into the area of where the guys are pulling between 40 and 50% of the balls in the pull field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so, yeah, so you run out of pull hitters pretty quickly. I guess I could have looked at the guys who go to the opposite field all the time, but there's this really small group in Japan of extreme pull hitters, and extremes kind of, in this case, is a tiny group. It's basically Tetsuto Yamada and some of his close personal friends. And basically, the Bay Stars are doing better against the guys who pull the ball more again than the rest of the league. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Okay. All right. Now, making a seamless transition, I'd like to talk about the union and the collision play and the collision mm-hmm. rule that was changed and all that stuff. Now, we talked about it on the show last week. The MPB wanted to change the rule and tweak the rule halfway through. And basically what they wanted to do was take out the ruling if there is no collision that takes place. And they also wanted to get the players' consent, or they wanted to talk to the players and make sure that it was okay. And
that
that's
was kind of after the fact.
Well, that's where we left that, you know.
Yeah, they wanted to talk to the players after the players said they wanted them to talk to them.
Right, the players ruled it ruled down. Well, you said it on the show that the
right.
team that the MPB was going to go around to each of the teams and persuade them or convince them that these are the rules and it's going to be easier to understand. And that's where we left it last week.
That's kind of a positive way of putting it. They were going to tell them.
Yeah, well, I'm just, you know, setting up, I'm painting the picture so
okay,
everybody can
okay. broad strokes,
fill in their
broad
own
strokes,
colors.
Baby.
Yes. Yeah. So on Friday, the players voted against changing the collision rule midstream. They didn't want to have anything to do with that. And the league decided, or NPB decided, it would go around to each of the teams and explain what the rule changes were going to be. And by Tuesday, we had a rule change that was going to be implemented on Fridays with Friday's games. So.
Yep.
That's what happened, and it just looks like the league ramrodded the MPB players union into accepting the rules, and the optics, you know, don't look so great. And we've had Don Nomura on the show before talking about how weak the players union is, and it looks really bad here. But I don't know. I just thought if they didn't want it to be implemented, no matter what, they would hold the ground. But maybe the league had a very good explanation and say, hey, we're going to make it easier for the umpires to understand, we're going to make it easier for the teams to understand, and we're going to make it so that you don't have games in which, because apparently there were, you know, a lot of teams had grievances and were complaining to the league about not understanding the rule having misinterpretations of the rules.
Right, why was it interpreted this way against this team and interpreted this way against us?
And so apparently they gave their consent this past week. And you know, starting with the Friday games, that the new rule has been tweaked again. And basically that is that unless there is a collision, then there will be no implementation of the new collision rule. And also they're going to try to decide who initiated contact.
Well, that's almost irrelevant because and the reason I say that is because if the catcher is in the line, the guy is safe.
Okay.
Okay. Now, if there's a collision, it means, okay, it's not initiating the catcher, but the question is if the runner goes out of the line, if he has a path and he goes out of the path and there's collision, then it's the runner's fault. He's out regardless of what happened in the collision. If the catcher is obstructing the line, then the runner is safe. So it's not a matter of the catcher. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The catcher is not going to initiate contact, but he can be at fault.
Right. Right. Yeah. And again, the way that it was worded, and we know Japanese can be a vague language anyway, the story that I translated, it basically said, did someone make a deliberate act to initiate contact? And I'm like, that is very, very hard to decide.
Well, they had, obviously, they've had one ruling, as far as I know, of that this year, and that was Shonakata.
The orcs.
When he thumped Yamazaki. He thumped him in the chest. He gave him a little forearm as he passed him by. And he,
you say forearm, I say flinch. we talked about that
either
before.
Either way, he had to get some medical treatment before he returned to the game. And he got a minor bruise. It wasn't any big deal, but it was just kind of a dumb play. And anyway, so they had to review whether he had gone beyond his brief to make contact. So that was the only time that's actually been looked at. So there really hasn't been any contact, and so in that there haven't been any injuries at home plate this year. So in that case, the thing's been a massive success.
Right.
I'm good with that. I mean, it's been also a mess, and you know that happens.
But. Yeah, my whole point was the union just kind of looked pretty weak, and hopefully the rule benefits the play, because we've seen guys get called out or be safe when the umpires were making mistakes. So I mean, think if they clarified it and everybody can be on the same page, I'm happy with it.
I mean, the whole reason for this issue is because baseball rules had allowed runners who had no business being safe the option of basically knocking the catcher unconscious. I'm not joking.
I know you're not joking.
And knocking the catcher unconscious, stripping the ball from his body, and then stepping on home plate and being safe. Now, so if you could accomplish that, it didn't matter whether the catcher had the ball 5 minutes, you know, if you were running from second base. It didn't matter where you were coming from or how slow you were, you know, if you could create a violent collision. So basically they were saying, okay, that's what we want to get rid of in the majors as well. And they have done that. And so, but what we saw in Japan was guys who had no business being safe being ruled safe because the catcher had, you know, he had a cleat mark in the baseline.
Right.
He left the runner 5 feet of open space to run in, but oh, no, cleat mark in the baseline, the guy's safe.
Okay. All right, so making a four-seam transition, I was sitting around thinking about baseball, as I tend to do sometimes, you might know.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked, Mr. Gibson.
And I was thinking, okay, there's this stat about WHIP, and that's, you know, how many runners basically you put on in an inning. And then there are quick, easy innings.
There are.
And I thought, okay, well, is the best guy in WHIP, the WHIP leader, also the best guy in having 1, 2, 3 innings? Because that's low-stress innings. For example, let's say a guy has a WHIP of 1, but it can be different because you can put a couple guys on. You can face bases loaded in one inning and then maybe get a couple 1, 2, 3 innings in there. And then in the fourth inning, you got another runner on. Well, your WHIP is 1. But you've had the bases loaded and it's a high stress situation. So I just wondered who are the guys who have the best WHIP, and do they actually have the easiest innings out there? Are they putting together the 1, 2, 3 innings and setting down the side quickly and getting their batters back up in the batter's box? So I asked Michael Westbay to take a look, and here's what he found.
Hey there, John and Jim. Michael here. John approached me a couple of weeks ago with the question of which pitchers threw the most 1, 2, 3 innings. Hey, that's a very good question. Through the end of play on Friday, July 22nd, there are 6 pitchers who have thrown 50 or more innings with 3 up and 3 down. The Giants' Tomoyuki Sugano, who struck out the top of the Bay Stars in order in the third inning on Friday, leads both leagues, having thrown 1, 2, 3 innings 62 times so far this season. The Tigers' Randy Messenger and Eagles' Takahiro Norimoto have thrown 53 quick innings apiece. The Carps' Chris Johnson shares fourth place in the list at 50 with the Fighters' Shohei Ohtani and the Marines' Wakui. How about striking out the side in order, like Sugano did in the third inning on Friday? Well, it turns out that Sugano actually ranks second in that category, having struck out the side 3 times, along with Giant teammate Tetsuya Utsumi, Buffalo's Yuki Nishi, the Bay Stars' Guillermo Moscoso, Dragons' Raul Valdez and Shinji Tajima, and the Tigers' Marcos Mateo. The king of striking out the side? None other than Wonder Boy Shohei Ohtani, having done so 4 times so far this season. Interestingly, it's starters who seem to dominate striking out the side, 6 of the 8 having done so 3 times or more, being starters with over 50 innings pitched. But Mateo and Tajima, both relievers, have done so on just 35 and 39 innings, respectively. Well, all right. Starters play the long game and don't really have to shut the opposition down completely inning after inning, whereas relievers kind of do. So let's look back and see the top relievers who have retired the sides in order. The Hawks' Dennis Sarfate, over 43 innings pitched in 44 relief appearances, has been perfect for 28 innings. That is to say, 65% of the innings he's pitched, Sarfate has retired the opposition in order. Next is Giants' Scott Matheson, retiring his opponents in order 25 times in 50 innings. That is, half his innings pitched. Then the Carps' Jay Jackson has done so 22 times in 46 and a third innings. It should come as no surprise that these are the top relievers in the two leagues. Sarfate with the most saves in the Pacific League, and Matheson and Jackson ranked numbers 1 and 2 in the Central League for holds. If there is any interest in viewing the raw data and analysis, I'm considering posting it up on Medium. Write me at westbaystars@japanesebaseball.com if that interests you, and I'll put something together. In the meantime, back to you, John and Jim.
Oh, thank you, Michael.
Thanks again, Michael. Appreciate you taking the time to do that. Mm. And so, yeah, so, you know, the whip leader in Japan is also Tomoyuki Sugano. So this makes sense. It makes sense that he has the most 1-2-3 mm. innings. But in the Central League, the next guy who's second in whip is Kenta Ishida of the Bay Stars mm-hmm. at 1.05.
Mm-hmm.
He's nowhere near the top of this list that Michael has. So I thought that was very interesting. And, of course, he's got everybody listed in mm-hmm. With both leagues. And in the Pacific League, the whip leader is none other than Shohei Ohtani. But he's tied with teammate Kohei Arihara. And they're both at 1.01. And so I just found this whole thing interesting. There's Kodai Senga is third in the Pacific League with 1.06. And, you know, I don't think of him as a guy who just, you know, shuts him down. He doesn't seem like that guy to me. But this number of 1-2-3 innings, Sugano 61, he's far and away. And then there's Randy Messenger.
Mm.
I thought that was amazing. He's number two, tied with Takahiro Norimoto of Rakuten.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
Some really fascinating stuff. I just, the 1-2-3 innings thing, I think means a lot to me because I hear people talking about whip and the thing is you don't want to walk guys unnecessarily. And you hear pitchers talk about, you know, unnecessary walks or frivolous walks, and they want to pitch around guys. So they want better matchups, especially if somebody happens to get on, if there's an error,
right.
If somebody gets on base, they want to pitch around certain guys and set up favorable matchups. And it looks like Sugano just takes on all comers. He's not going to walk people. He's not trying to pitch around people. He's going to try to get everybody out.
Well, to some degree, yeah. I mean, there are times when, you know, sanity, you know, or I guess discretion's the better part of valor.
Right.
I mean, I think that, you know, it depends on the situation, but generally, no. And he's not going to, because he's not getting leadoff guys on, he's often in the position where he can challenge people and, you know, and let the chips fall.
And then no surprise that Sarfate among the relievers was at the top. Yeah.
No,
he's just having a fantastic year.
Yeah, I know. This is the third year which we've said, wow, Dennis Sarfate is even better than he was last year.
Yeah.
I mean, this is getting to be a thing. I mean, what's going to happen next year? Is this guy like going to sprout wings and something? What's going on with this guy?
Now, there were some other trends that you wanted to talk about, and I know that the Fighters, and again, they've been on this great run.
Mm.
yet they're still not in first place.
Well, they're getting there. I mean, they're getting to the point right now where you have to look at them and say, wow, what they've done this year is as impressive as what SoftBank has done. So I think that's quite interesting, because we don't think of the Fighters as having, you know, that huge talent base, and they don't, but it's they're letting it all hang out up there in Sapporo, so to speak.
Well, obviously, if we've got Kohei Arihara matching Shohei Ohtani in whip, when we know that he doesn't match him in speed and pitching skills and everything, but they're getting the job done. That's what's happening. They're getting the job done. So what did you say? Since what day? They're 20-1?
Since June 19, which was towards the end of Interleague. June 18th, they lost June 17th and 18th to the Chunichi Dragons, of all people.
Sorry, Coaster Freak.
They're 20-1 since then.
Wow.
Yeah, so the one game they lost was to the Oryx Buffaloes.
And yet, we're taping on Sunday morning. Before the game start, they are 3.5 games out of first place. So
they had a, you know, they were, I can't remember now, but they were like 12 games out of first place or 11 games out of first place when this started, and the Hawks basically have been a 500 team, so they're inching up.
The item of note I wanted to point out was that they're still 5 behind in the loss column, although they're only 2 back in the win column. But
okay, you can take your loss column and put it where it does the most good, I think.
Hashtag high heat.
I'm just thinking, you know, those losses are hard to make up.
I know the theory. Yeah, I don't. Okay. I think it's nonsense, but I know the theory.
All righty. Okay. Nonsense. Okay. Nonsense. Says Mr. Numbers. All right.
Indeed. Mr.
And,
Numbers. Wow.
What else did you found something about the OPS? Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of interesting things. I guess in regards to left-handed pitchers, and I noticed that the Hiroshima Carp have. You know, the Hiroshima Carp have faced the most left-handed starters in the past month.
Okay.
They've had teams have started 12 lefties against the Carp. Now, I'm really not certain what the point of that is. I mean, they're probably thinking, wow, Brad Eldred isn't there, so we can sneak one in there. But the problem is that Takahiro Arai and Seiya Suzuki and Hector Luna are carrying a load that Brad Eldred and probably 300 or 400 of his most distant relatives couldn't fill.
Mm.
The Carp have an 880 OPS versus left-handed pitchers, which is by far the best. So they've been beating up the lefties pretty good, but people keep throwing them at them.
Hey, man, if that's all you have in your rotation, I mean, what can you do? You're not going to bring up somebody from the farm just to face him. Yeah.
You don't, unless you're Hideki Kuriyama, you generally don't. Now, on the other side of the coin and on the other side of the field of the Mazda Stadium, lefty pitchers in the past month have gone, lefty starters have gone 6-0 against the Hanshin Tigers. And in that period, 265 plate appearances, the Tigers batters, and I think this is largely due to, well, you know who you are, the right-handed hitters who have not hit well the past month, and against lefties, the Tigers OPS is 560, which is like, you know, if that was Kenta Imamiya, you'd say, we got to get this guy out of shortstop, he's killing us.
Okay, all right. All right, so yeah, some interesting numbers. Now, last night on Saturday, just to hit some notes here real quick, Hiroki Kuroda, as we talked about before, was on the verge of his 200th win, and he got it with a 7-0 victory at home against the Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great achievement for a guy, and he's a very good pitcher. And I looked at his numbers, and I looked at his career, and we already decided, we know that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. It's not a question. But, you know, he had picked up win number 199 on June 29th and then had a couple situations where he couldn't win. Let's put it that way. But he has been a big achiever, I think, for a guy who was the second pick in the draft. Oh, I'm sorry, second Carp pick in 1996.
Well, yeah,
I'm not saying overachiever, just a big achiever.
He has been a big achiever for a guy who's, I think, vastly underrated.
Yeah. Okay, and underrated. I mean, he hasn't really, and again, you can't really look solely at the wins and all that stuff.
No, especially not for a guy who pitched not for the Cardinals.
Right, and, but he won 15.
That's amazing. You he won 15 games.
That's his highest in NPB.
Right, with a team that has basically no offense.
Right, yeah. And I think he won 16 with the Yankees in 2012, so that was his career high. He was the ERA leader in the Central League one time in 2006, pitching in a park where the ball could pop out and fly over the fence at any moment.
Yeah, I mean, you put him in a different, you know, a different team in a different era, and this guy is like probably 2-time Cy Young Award winner.
Right.
But yeah, Carp, no chance.
Just been a really reliable pitcher, and can't wait to see him go into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, been great. Really reliable in the sense that's what you call a guy who's you respect, but you don't really. And I'm not saying this about you, John Gibson, but you know the media. You know, it's like, how do we treat this guy who just keeps going out there week after week, year after year? Oh, he's reliable. Ah, that's Kuroda. He's not a big star. You know, he's not the big star, but he's reliable. But I'll tell you, he was, I think, certainly the best pitcher of this generation, of his generation in MPB. So.
Yeah, and I remember we talked about, we had a discussion about Kenshin Kawakami.
We did.
And Kuroda, and I was arguing for Kawakami, and obviously I lost that argument in more ways than two.
Yeah, basically was, I did a comparison of how they pitched against the rest of the Central League, not in their home parks.
Right. I think argument was in 2006 or just before
Kawakami. It was just before Kawakami, either Kawakami or Kuroda went to the majors, and we were talking about it. So.
Yeah. Fun days. All right. Another note, and I just know that Jim would love this because I bet when you saw this on the notes, you just thought, oh no, I have nothing to say about this. But
no!
Yohei Oshima of the Dragons hit for the cycle against the Carp on Wednesday in a 7-6 victory, and he became the 64th player to do it and the 68th time. He was the first Dragons player to do it since Alex Ochoa in 2004. And he was the 15th guy to do it in just 4 plate appearances. He came up and I think it was a home run, double, triple, and then he had this little floater for a single that went over Kosuke Tanaka at short. And to me, the triple actually was a double that was misplayed by Yoshihiro Maru in center.
You get those when the guy's got a home run and a double.
And the only reason I wanted to talk about that was because of this play is because I'm really starting to get frustrated with the way scoring is done in baseball in that an infielder who lets a ball play him gets an error, and an outfielder who lets a ball play him but doesn't touch the ball doesn't get anything. Yep. And in this case, Maru took a J-shaped route to this ball and where he came in and went back on it, and then it got to the wall, so Oshima was able to go to third, and I just think that was an error. It should have been a double and an error, and not a triple, but they ruled it a triple, and that's what they always do.
I just think
it's very unfair to with the infielders having a split second to make a decision and an outfielder having an entire second to make a decision and making the wrong one should get an error as well.
They're pretty much if, you know, the ball doesn't hit you, it's not your fault.
Right, so I didn't think that was a real legitimate cycle, but it goes in the books as a cycle. And then I wanted to talk about Ichiro Suzuki. He is closing in on his 3,000th hit in the major leagues, and I just wanted to mention the fact that it seems like the Miami Marlins are dragging this situation out, getting themselves on NHK a lot, getting themselves on J Sky Sports in Japan, making a good promotion video, so to speak, for Japanese players who might consider going to the States in the future, that the Miami Marlins. You don't have to go to the Yankees and Dodgers, where we've seen a lot of Japanese players go, even Seattle, that the Miami Marlins are interested in having Asian players as well, and this is how we're treating one of your biggest stars. And I thought they were dragging it out, but the thing to keep in mind is that's still a very talented outfield, and they're not using Ichiro Suzuki any differently than they had since the beginning of the season, even though he's inching closer to this milestone. They're not throwing him out there every day and starting him just so that he can get it. They're staying with their plan, which I thought, you know, in a couple ways was really good.
I think it is quite good, yes. The manager, Miami manager Don Mattingly, has said in the past that he wants Ichiro Suzuki to know when he's starting and the conditions when he's starting, you know, so he can be prepared and be at his best. And he's good with that. He's good with that idea that his guy can be at his best. Right. Some managers sort of take that as a challenge. I'll tell you when you're going to be. You'll be at your best when I tell you you're at your best. Don't give me any back talk. Get out there and play. Right. Broken leg. What's that broken leg? Get out there.
So I think next week we'll be able to talk in depth a little bit more about Ichiro Suzuki and his milestone. Right now it's time for fielding questions. All right, the first one is an MP3. Woo! First time in a long time from Mike in DC.
Mm-hmm. Hey, John and Jim. Recently, the MLB has had a really big problem with young pitching studs all tearing up their elbows and needing to get Tommy John surgery. In Japan, known for overworking its high school pitchers, most of the young pitching stars in MPB have avoided the same injury and the same need for surgery. Has there ever been a study about how Japanese techniques maybe preserve pitchers' arms or anything like that that possibly would show that there's a benefit to only pitching once a week or throwing in between innings? Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike. Tommy John surgeries. I think, this is really kind of an interesting question. And I think they do perform Tommy John surgeries. And if you asked Shohei Tateyama, he would probably say it's not a case. There are too few in Japan.
He might say, you know, I can do it now. I know how to do it.
That's right. I've seen enough of them. Even under anesthetic, my arm remembers. So him and Kazuki Yoshimi are very familiar with the procedure. I think what happens is that there are a huge amount of pitches thrown in amateur ball here. But I think the other thing that we have in Japan is that we have better court the players. And Tom House, former pitching coach, a major league pitching coach who's been to Japan quite a bit, has said the Japanese players have better core strength. They have better muscle balance in the sense that their bodies are tend to be trained physically from top to bottom as opposed to just upper body or lower body.
Right.
And I think that helps them withstand that a bit. The other thing is that because of the way junior high school kids are trained, you know, we get a lot of kids in America, I think, who are weeded out in high school and college. I think you get a lot of that culling of people who probably are vulnerable to injury at a much lower level in Japan. I think junior high school is ripe for kids who ruin their arms. And so you never even hear about them. They don't forget Tommy John surgery. So I think a lot of the guys who are most vulnerable get wiped out early by the system. And then mm-hmm. the ones who a lot of the guys who train better can withstand that better, the more rigorous or the heavier workloads here.
Right.
That's my theory. You know, that's the theory, Darwin.
Yeah, Mike, I did do some internet surfing and try to find some research, if anyone has been doing some research in Japan. I couldn't really find anything. All the research I see is all the things that came up in Google were mostly research that's been done in the States that someone has translated in Japanese. But here are a couple of things I wanted to just throw out there, because I think we've talked about this issue on the show before, and I think what we said was Yu Darvish, when he went over and started having arm problems, he said, hey, maybe throwing once a week is a good thing. Maybe a six-man rotation is a good thing. Maybe throwing between innings and keeping that everything loose and warm is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So he's talked about that before, but I've never heard of, because of the lack of, you know, we talked and we know that it's an epidemic in the States and that sometimes people just say, well, go ahead and have the Tommy John surgery early on. It'll make your arm stronger. It'll make your arm stronger. We've heard all these things, just crazy talk everywhere. But I've never heard of someone saying, you know, Japan doesn't have this problem and they throw their guy, they throw pitchers. We've heard, you know, the Nomos throwing 160 something pitches. We've heard just last week, Yuki Nishi throwing 148 pitches and we don't see these guys. We don't hear about major league guys coming over here and performing a study.
Right.
We haven't heard that. And so, and conversely, we've seen some of the Japanese players go to the pitchers go to the States.
Yeah, wiped out.
Daisuke Matsuzaka, Kyuji Fujikawa, Yu Darvish, to name a few, and end up having Tommy John surgery. Masahiro Tanaka has problems. He's pitching much better, but he still had issues when he went over. So maybe the problem is stateside, and that whatever they're doing here in Japan, whether it's wearing guys out or making them stronger when they're really young instead of babying them and trying to get them through certain number of innings, just to, you know, because everybody's different. And I don't know. I don't have a medical degree at all. Everybody's different. That's the one thing you have to remember. So some guy can maybe throw the 148 pitches and one guy throws one pitch and his arm blows up. So who knows? But I would like to see MLB come over to Japan and do a study and send some doctors over here. That would be interesting.
But you know, the workloads in Japan, we did have a rash of guys having Tommy John surgery in Japan about 10, 15, well, I guess over the past 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's still happening. It's still happening, but I think they're taking a better look at what the pitchers are doing as professionals. College, not so much. High school, not so much. But they are doing a better job of monitoring. I mean, there certainly are right now, compared to 20 years ago, a vastly larger group of successful pitchers in their early to mid 30s. When I came to Japan, when I was in Japan and really studying Japanese baseball 20 years ago, that was a really tiny group.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, if you were over 30, you were like a reliever hanging. You're a former ace pitcher hanging on as a reliever.
Gotcha. Okay. Next question is from Kansai Carl, and he says, what have you guys heard about Logan Ondrasek? I was watching the Yakult's Chunichi game in which Ondrasek, with considerable help from outfield play, blew a 3-run lead and went back to the dugout and gave a piece of his mind to the Yakult coaching staff. And after that, blah, 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 he reads on. He said, so what went wrong? I can remember when Gaijin meltdowns were a regular feature of MPB action. So that's, and he signs it, Tomei Ningen. My buddy Tomei. All right, so this all stems from this June 26th game that Carl referenced in his letter, and Ondrasek blew the lead, went back to the dugout, blew up. And the article I read a couple of articles, and one that had the whole timeline, and one of the articles said that he actually at some point pushed manager Mitsuru Manaka, and that's really what sent Manaka going in the other direction. And then a series of events happened where they said, okay, if he apologized, he'd be allowed to pitch on the farm, and after a little stint on the farm, he'd be brought back up to the first team. And he had to go and apologize to the manager, and he did so and apologized to teammates. And then later on, I saw a report where front office man Junji Ogawa, the former manager, was just blowing smoke, saying he's not going to be released, but he's going to be going back to the States for a short stint. He's got family issues or a family matter to attend to. And then all of a sudden, they came back and said he wants to be released. And I remember when I was out at Jingu for the Coco Ballantine interview that I did, I tweeted that Ondrasek was out in the back behind the indoor facility. The backyard, the Jingu backyard, and he was arguing with staff and ended up storming out of practice that day. And you know, I wanted to ask him, but when a big guy like that's walking really mad, you really can't stop him. And I just figured I'd see him another day and ask him about it. So I knew he had a tendency to be volatile, be a fiery guy at times. But I don't know. I don't have any inside story. We've seen this before. with foreign players. It just, maybe something didn't work out, or something, maybe something they were asking him to do wasn't working out. I mean, if guy makes an error, you really can't blame him, because the pitchers don't always put the ball where they want to put the ball. So that's basically an error on their part. And even when they put the ball where they want to, sometimes it gets hit. So I don't think it was just that game that made him blow up. I think
so. Obviously, he's especially if you're a relief pitcher, you know, the biggest thing you have to deal with is not your command, but your I think mental control,
mm-hmm.
and ability to block out failures, you know, and stay positive when there's no reason to be, that a normal person would not be positive.
Right.
You know, and say, I can execute, I can execute, I can execute, and believing you can execute. So obviously I think there were issues, you know, when he thought he was executing, and maybe something was going on there. You know, usually when something big like that happens, there's another story, which we are not privy to.
Right. Right. So, I mean, the bullpen has actually been looking okay, better than it had been in the first part of the season. I think Ryo Hirai and Ryo Akiyoshi have been okay, and again, not great, but been okay.
It was like the towering inferno, and now it's like Titanic.
You mean the smoldering dumpster instead of the towering inferno?
Yeah, well, still sinking. It's still a dangerous place to be, but you know, yeah, at least you're not going to burn to death.
Yeah, Josh Lukey has seen more time on the mound, and he's been okay. He gives up a lot of base runners, but you know, sometimes he gets into trouble, sometimes he gets out of it. They just haven't been terrible like they were when they were losing a lot of games, and they've been winning more recently, especially since the All-Star break. So obviously Logan was an asset. I think they're going to miss him, but I think they can certainly do similar things to what they're doing right now. I don't know if that's going to get by or not. They got to have leads or they got to stay close. So we'll have to see.
Well, you know, they weren't too concerned about kicking that asset out of Japan. So
kick that asset right out of Japan. All right, Max, I know you have a question that you sent in. We will get to it next week. Anyone else who has a question or comments, we always accept comments, and especially by MP3s like Mike. We love them. Send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Mm. Tweet us at #HighHeat at JBW Podcast, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Look for us on iTunes. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Okay, thanks for listening.